House Committee on Judiciary come to order. Today is Tuesday, February 14th. Happy Valentine's Day. We're going to go out of order a little bit. I have Representative Susan McClain is here and needs to testify and get on to another hearing. So I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2605 and call Representative McClain.
Thank you, Chair Barker, members of the committee. House Bill 2605 would add one additional judicial position to the 1st, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 11th, 14th, and 16th judicial districts. It would also add two additional positions to the 20th judicial districts, with these judges assuming office on the first Monday in January 2019. There is no revenue impact. There is a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, and there are no amendments.
Okay, please.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and committee. I am here to talk on House Bill 2605, and I am Susan McClain, and I'm the state representative from House District 29, which is Western Washington County. I'm here before you today to talk about support for additional judges for our county. If you look down at the 20th Circuit, I believe on the bill here, it says that right now the district consists of 14 and we're asking for two more. And I want to give you some statistical proof on why that's really necessary and important. At this time, you will find that the judiciary positions are crucial for timely service to residents of Washington County. Washington County has already built another courtroom and has been sitting vacant since 2015. Washington County has the highest citizen to judge ratio, and it's 1 to 41,000. And if you look at Multnomah County, you'll find that it's half that much. In 2003 was the last new judicial seat that was given, and since that time we've had over 100,000 new residents join us in Washington County. You will find, if you look at judicial matters that are in the juvenile courts, that we are close to not reaching federally mandated timelines to get those cases taken care of. I'm going to end with just a comment from one of the lawyers, and I've received testimony, I'm sure you have too. We'll check all this, and if you don't have them, we'll make sure that we submit them. But from the Harris Law Firm, from Washington County Judge Bailey, from Washington County Chapter of Oregon Women's Lawyers, and also from Washington County Judge Sims, and they may be here to testify at this time or in Ways and Means. This was sent to me by Garland, Griffiths, and Knott attorneys, and this is from a law firm on the First Avenue in Hillsborough. Dear Representative McClain, as a practicing attorney who lives in Washington County and works in the court there on a daily basis, I strongly urge you to support House Bill 2605 to increase the number of judges in Washington County to 16. I represent ordinary citizens in civil and probate matters in Washington County, and we have insufficient judges to handle the workload of our growing county. Due to the lack of enough judges, there are significant problems for my clients, suffering because of long delays in obtaining rulings, handling hearings, and trials in our court. This is a matter that it should have a bipartisan support, as all citizens need an efficient and functioning court system. Please feel free to contact us, and we'll provide more information. I know that Judge Bailey also has given a fact sheet, and if you look at that fact sheet, which I do believe is on OLIS, that you will see some of the more particulars that deal with the efficiency or lack of efficiency and lack of opportunity to be able to do the superior job that we need to do for our citizens in our court system. I appreciate you letting me go first, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Did we have any questions for the representative? Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony. And I'm going to close the hearing on this, and we're open a different hearing because the next, some of the other group also has other things to get to. So we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2605, which we will reopen shortly, and open a public hearing on House Bill 2636, and call Chief Justice Ballmer, please.
Thank you, Chair Barker, members of the committee. House Bill 2636 increases the current annual salary for Oregon judges. It also establishes rate increases of those salaries through January 1st, 2020. There is no revenue impact. Again, there is a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, and there are no amendments.
Thank you. And Judge Stauffer also, please. Okay, please go ahead, Chief.
Thank you, Chair Barker, members of the committee. I'm Tom Ballmer, the Chief Justice of the Oregon Supreme Court. And with me today is Judge Janet Stauffer, She's a circuit judge who, for a court that lives up to its name, as a circuit court, she actually is in the 7th Judicial District, which covers Hood River, Wasco, Sherman, Gillum, and Wheeler counties. And she's appearing here today because she's the chair of the Oregon Circuit Judges, Circuit Court Judges Association. And I'm going to speak for just a couple minutes, and then we'll hear from Judge Stauffer, if that's okay, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I'd like to thank you for holding the hearing today, Valentine's Day, and Oregon's birthday, of course, and the tie. And there's a little sort of a feeling of patriotism, state patriotism in the building, it seems to me. We saw the Constitution downstairs, so it's an appropriate time for us to be here. To talk just briefly about this important topic, and it's important really for all three branches of government and for anyone who cares about the quality of justice in Oregon. And that's why this judicial compensation issue is my priority for this session, if there are opportunities to add to the Judicial Department budget. I'd also like to thank the committee members who've signed the letter in support of House Bill 2636. We have 22 senators and 40 representatives from both parties and really all across the state who have signed this letter as of yesterday. And I very much appreciate the bipartisan support and the support from both houses for this bill. Oregon's problem with judicial compensation was really decades in the making. And the problem is, frankly, that our compensation is set in a statute. So it takes an act of the legislature, both houses passing it and the governor signing it, to get to increase our compensation by $1. That makes it different from almost every other position like this in the state and in state government. It is like the governor's salary or like your salaries. And it's a heavy lift, as you know, for me to come before you and ask for compensation and a compensation increase. Because of your efforts, however, we've made really important steps in the past 4 years. We've made some progress towards getting to our goal, which was the goal set by the last independent group to look at this, the Public Officials Compensation Commission, which in 2008 did a very thorough examination of compensation for judges and other state officials, and said that they felt Oregon judges should be paid at the median of the 13 western states. And the bill that we have in now would get us to that level over 4 years, really. It goes into the next biennium, but it would put into place three increases in compensation that would get to that goal of the median of the 13 western states. By any measure, Oregon state judges are underpaid. When you compare us to judges in other states, we have been at the bottom. We actually, at one point, we were 50th. Actually, at one point, some of our judges were 51st out of the 50 states plus the District of Columbia when you adjusted for cost of living. Now, our circuit judges with the increases are at 48th when adjusted for the cost of living, and in the bottom tier, even just in terms of nominal dollars, not adjusting for cost of living. Our judges are underpaid when you compare them to the salary of Oregon lawyers. The last time the Oregon State Bar did a survey of lawyer salaries in 2011, the average salary was about what the judges were making, our circuit court judges were making last year, 2016. That survey, and again, 2011, also showed that the average lawyers in their 40s were making $145,000 a year. And our judges last year were making about 130, and judges in their lawyers in their 60s were making about 167,000. That's the median, and that was in 2011. That's way more than any circuit judge makes. It's way more than I make. Our judges are also underpaid compared to other public sector lawyers, particularly the lawyers who appear before our judges on many occasions. The Deputy Attorney General, which is the position that I held under Attorney General Kulongoski 20 years ago, makes significantly more than any justice on the Supreme Court, including me, with the administrative responsibilities of running this branch of government. According to the Oregon Transparency website, dozens of state lawyers make more than a circuit judge, including the Legislative Council, the Chief Deputy, and 100 Senior Assistant Attorneys General. And that doesn't even include the senior district attorneys Multnomah, Marion, Washington County, these lawyers are all making more than our trial court judges. The top city and county attorneys, the senior lawyers at the Oregon State Bar, the law professors at our state law school, all these people make much more than our circuit judges, and most of them make more than the Chief Justice. Now, I don't point out these salaries to say that the other salaries are inappropriate, only to point out that those skilled, experienced attorneys are not where we're likely to find our next generation of judges. The economic sacrifice is simply too great for some of them. Now, we don't have to pay judges what a 50-year-old successful partner is making at the big Portland law firms. Public service is what draws us to this. There's a great reward in that. This is important work that we get to do, and we all enjoy it, or we wouldn't be doing it. We're not doing it for the money. My mother would scold me for whining, and it's not appropriate to talk about how much you make, especially if you're complaining about it. And so I'm not really speaking for myself. I'm speaking for the 200 judges we have now who work really hard at some very difficult matters that you tell them to act on. I mean, we're not complaining, but the legislature every year gives us new issues to deal with. There are new crimes. There are new ways to deal with the difficult situations in families. And we need people who are thoughtful, who are experienced, who are calm and have the appropriate demeanor, and who are smart and compassionate and can do this work. We need to pay them appropriately for the kind of work we're asking them to do. In 2015, the legislature approved a mechanism to provide for cost of living adjustments, and that was really important to us, and I really appreciate those of you who were around and voted for that, because you addressed a major problem, which was we'd sink way behind in compensation, and then, you know, every 5 years or so we'd get a big bump, but that would just keep us up with inflation, and it didn't really address the issue of paying judges what we really should pay them for the work that we do. So we need to increase compensation to keep our aging judges on the bench. I was just talking with Representative Olson about this baby boom cohort we have, and people are getting to the point where they can retire, and I think that the steps that you've taken in the last couple of years, frankly, have helped us in that regard. I think we've had some people who might have retired, gone back to practice law, as some people do, or go out and be mediators, as some do, or go into business, but have said, well, I see some step increases out there, and I'm going to stick with this. That has been very important as we go through the inevitable transition of the baby boomer cohort moving on and trying to bring onto the bench some of the best young lawyers, the best young deputy district attorneys, and the best defense lawyers, the best lawyers out of firms around the state, and out of legal aid and the other places where we get good lawyers. And my goal is keeping around for a while the more senior judges and attracting really good new judges. In order to maintain the quality of Oregon's bench, and we really do have a very strong bench, we need to be able to bring those new folks on and keep the ones that we've got. We need judges who can help people who can't afford a lawyer try to solve the difficult child custody issues that come before them with wisdom and compassion. We need judges who can face victims of crime and create a sense of reality and a sense of justice, and the reality of justice. We need to be able to interpret and apply complex contractual provisions and decide the civil cases worth millions or sometimes hundreds of millions of dollars that come to the Oregon courts. So I just close by asking you not to think just of the cost of having these highly qualified judges on the bench, but what would it cost not to have them? Thank you. And after Judge Stauffer finishes, I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Judge Stauffer, please.
Chair Baker and members of the Judiciary Committee, for the record, I am Janet Stauffer. I am a judge in the 7th Judicial District, which the Chief Justice described to you. I also have the privilege of serving as the president of the Circuit Court Judges Association. And today, I think to impress upon you how important it is to our association, we have all of the members of our executive board here. Lori Holland from Lane County, Josephine Mooney from Lane County, Benjamin Bloom from Jackson County, and Mary James from Marion County. We have another judge sitting over here too, the presiding judge here in Marion County, Tracy Prawl. I think she's here for another matter though. She's probably concerned about this one also. This is the fourth year that I've attended and testified at these hearings on behalf of the Circuit Court Judges Association. I'm honored for the opportunity and thankful for the work that you have done here for our group and for the judges in general. We really are appreciative of the work that you've done over the last few years. We're here today just to ask you to finish that job. We're asking for nothing new. We've had the same ask every time I've been here. We're not upping the figure. We would like to be at the median salary of the Western states, the 13 Western states. Unfortunately, I want to acknowledge that we come to you this time in a very difficult fiscal environment, one in which you are hearing from your constituents probably daily about the need for their basic needs to be met. These are the people that we serve every day. I know that most of you are aware of the work that we do. Our days are filled to the brim with making decisions that impact families, children, businesses, agriculture, landlords and tenants, victims, and addressing the rights of those charged with crimes. Judges must be knowledgeable in all aspects of the law. The judicial branch plays a very important role in the checks and balances of government. Judges are now, in Oregon, usually the lowest paid lawyer in the courtroom. Maybe the defense attorneys, the criminal defense attorneys are probably paid less than us, but other than that, we are. Not only do most private hire attorneys earn significantly more than judges, as the chief mentioned, over 100 lawyers in the attorney general's office and many DAs also earn more than the judges to whom they plead their cases. As I said, we do not have a new request for you at this time. We are only asking that you set the salaries at the median of the Western states. Over 60 of your members have signed a letter, many of you included, and I appreciate that, in support of our bills. We need to get to that figure in order to keep our current judges and to recruit lawyers to fill the new positions. The Oregonians that we serve deserve a highly qualified bench to hear and adjudicate the matters that are most important to them in their daily lives. Adequate judicial salaries ensure that we can recruit and retain those judges who are qualified for the job. Once again, I want to thank you for your prior support and ask that you please finish this job by implementing the fiscally prudent bill that we've suggested or that the chief has submitted, which over time will ensure adequate compensation. I think both of us mentioned at the last hearing where we testified that if you get us there, we'll go away. On this issue, anyway. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
I'm not sure.
Well, Mr. Chair, I just, the chief and Judge Stoff, they are absolutely right on with what they're asking of us and everything. They do an outstanding job. Through our state, and I get where they're at and appreciate them.
And I'll just say, I had a constituent who was upset, thought that he was being mistreated by the court. So I went and spent a day with him in court, and it was a family court in Washington County. And I was so impressed with the way the judge handled these very divisive things, child support and calming everybody down. And I was really amazed. In fact, I wrote him a letter thanking him for the great job he was doing up there. We've seen and we know you're underpaid.
Right.
And again, not as underpaid as the public defenders, but you are underpaid. So thank you very much for your testimony. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Gorsuch.
Well, I just wanted to echo what Representative Olson said. You do very, very important work, and you deserve much better compensation.
And Representative Greenwich.
Yeah, I feel somewhat of a conflict of interest in this, but I would like to comment. The important thing about a salary to a lot of people is how it relates to the sense of how important this place in your position. And while it's hard to, those of us that are paid $24,000 a year find it a little hard to say $130,000 is not an adequate pay. But the real issue is it really says we're undervaluing that position, and that's such an important position in our society. That branch of government is very important to us, and showing that we value service in that branch of government seems to me a very important thing to do.
That's right. Thank you. Anything further? Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2636 and open a work session on House Bill 2636. This has a subsequent referral.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I need to say a potential conflict of interest. Well, the class of 200 is a pretty large class.
Yeah.
My son is a circuit court judge in Multnomah County, and this would add significantly to his lifetime income, and it makes me, I wish our rules allowed us to not vote on issues that present this kind of a conflict. So far, I've been unsuccessful to get my colleagues to believe that. It's a different question.
Yeah, I don't, I, thank you, Representative. I know it's certainly not a legal conflict, but if for you it's a moral conflict, and I appreciate your input on that. Okay.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2636 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Williamson moves House Bill 2636 to the floor with a due pass with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Are there any questions? Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Okay, and we'll go back then and reopen the hearing on House Bill 2605. Again, call Chief Justice Ballmer.
Thank you, Chair Barker. Just for the record, I'm Tom Ballmer, Chief Justice of the Oregon Supreme Court. Let me just give a brief introduction, then I have some people who really know what on the ground details of what we need in the circuit courts right now, and give most of the time to them. We appreciate your scheduling the bill. This would add 9 statutory judicial positions. We have to have a statutory authority for each one of these positions, and it's also done by county, as you may know. I don't get to, if you want to at some point consider allowing the Chief Justice to move judicial positions around, I'd be happy to take that. We ran that up the flagpole a few years ago, and it got about a quarter of the way up and was shot down immediately. But one each in the counties that have been mentioned, and a number of counties, and then 2 in Washington. The Oregon Judicial Department contracted with the National Center for State Courts to do a workload study, and these courts, these 9 positions in 8 counties emerged from that study as having the greatest and most consistent needs. And I have with me today the presiding judges of 3 of these judicial districts who will talk briefly about what the lack of judicial resources means for their courts. And you have additional written testimony from other affected courts. Our interest in asking you to approve these new judicial positions is to ensure that we can fulfill the state's constitutional responsibility, this is in Article 1, Section 10 of the Constitution, that we administer justice completely and without delay. And that responsibility becomes more challenging as cases are increasingly complex and a large number of litigants are not represented by lawyers. We also need judicial positions to maintain the public's confidence in the courts. Chair Barker, I appreciate your comments about what you saw in Washington County Circuit Court when you were there recently. The fact is, people depend upon the courts. They expect to be heard respectfully with a judge who understands the issues and without a docket that causes the judge to have to go through and just bang the gavel and do one thing after another. There's a time for that. But a lot of times, being in court really requires a little bit of time, requires a little listening, and in order to give citizens the respect and the attention that the law and the facts need in their particular case, we need to have enough judges to do that. It's very hard to give citizens and lawyers the respect and consideration that their cases deserve with an overcrowded docket and with one eye on the clock. But with one eye on the clock, let me just close by saying that it's been more than a decade since the legislature authorized any new trial judges. Our population has grown substantially. Our courts have been asked to handle many new kinds of cases that we really didn't have 20 or 30 years ago. Family problems that we didn't have, at least to the extent we do now, 20 or 30 years ago. Some of the criminal issues we didn't have in the past. And we work diligently to make the best use of the resources we have. We've taken a number of steps internally. We have an Oregon docket management initiative to try and help our circuit courts handle cases at less cost and with greater speed. Speed is not the goal here, but we do need to be reasonably quick in getting things done. We do need to be efficient, and we do need to be fair and just. And to do that, we need a reasonable number of judges. Oregon's population, as I say, has increased quite substantially since we've had any new judges. These are the counties that have the greatest need. And with your permission, Mr. Chair, I'd like to call up Lindy Baker, the presiding judge in Josephine County, Tracy Prawl, presiding judge here in Marion, and Charles Bailey, the presiding judge in Washington County, to talk briefly about their individual courts and the need for these new judge positions.
Please.
Chairman, I ask that you have a question.
Sure.
Are we running into speedy trial problems with the situation in these counties?
You know, it's interesting, Chair Barker and Representative Greenlich, what happens is that the speedy trial constitutional provision applies to criminal cases.
The statutory.
That's right. We have statutory and constitutional obligations. What happens is that the civil cases, the family law cases, the probate issues, all these other things get bumped because we give, as we are required to constitutionally and probably appropriately, preference to the criminal cases. So we are starting to run into those problems, but we and our presiding judges, and they may be able to speak to this in more detail than I can, make sure that we are handling the criminal cases as quickly as we can and meeting our Speedy Trial Act obligations. But it's like the bump under the rug, you know, it pops up somewhere else, and where it pops up is in the civil cases, which are really important to a lot of people, to the people involved if they're injured, you know, in a car accident or in any other kind of case, or the corporations that look to the Oregon courts for resolving business disputes and commercial disputes, and the family law matters, which need to also move along pretty quickly. So that's a short answer to your question, I hope.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Isle.
Chief, I know that the number of judges per population in any particular county may not be a precise way to measure adequacy, but do you know if the new list has roughly even allocation among the counties once that new list were adopted?
Well, Chair Barker, Representative Vial, it will not even it out completely, and there are various reasons. We need to have a judge in Harney County and a judge in Lake County, even if we don't have 30,000 people in any of those counties. We do, as you probably know, in Eastern Oregon, and as you saw from Judge Stauffer, we have a number of judicial districts that have more than one county. This will not even it out completely. The legislature, I think, has been moved by considerations of history, of convenience for litigants and lawyers. I think that it's fair to say that in the more rural counties, we have a higher number of judges per 1,000 people than we do in the more urban counties. But this will move it in that direction. This will reduce the spread, if you will. And Washington County, frankly, I don't want to, not that I have any bargaining power here, but I don't want to bargain against myself, but the Washington County really is our top need. When you look at and Josephine and Marion also move up to the top, but when you look at the population growth in Washington County, the burgeoning of the family law docket, and the complexity of the cases that we have there and in some of the other urban counties, frankly also, the folks you're going to hear from today are really at the top of the list. So it won't completely, it won't be like, you know, legislative reapportionment where we get within, you know, 0.1%, but it will move us in a more, a fairer direction.
Follow up, if I might, Mr. Chairman. So I will say that I'm convinced we need not only more judges, but probably more judges in many places. I'm concerned that maybe we're not even forecasting far enough ahead so that we anticipate when we need these judges. And you do have some deployment authority as the chief, as I understand it. If we were to look at some of these lower population counties and kind of forecast out when we may need to maybe adjust downward in some cases, could we, with current resources, maybe look at adjusting upward in places like Washington County, that's rapidly becoming the Bellevue of Oregon, right? Or the idea that we're going to have a lot more resources there is inescapable.
Yeah, Representative Vial, those are interesting questions that we have not looked at in any detail. We did commission and worked with the National Center for State Courts on the study that of the number of positions that we would need to meet the sort of national criteria, and it was something like 30 positions. We made our made a cut because we understand that there's a lot of competition for resources, and requested 9, and essentially the 9 that were at the top of the list, the most needy. I'd be happy to participate in a discussion with members of the committee or others in the legislature about overall deployment of judicial resources. What we have done more recently is, and what I do have some authority over, is staff. But all these judicial positions are in legislation. It says this county has one judge. This county has 2 judges. And we have not, we don't, I don't have authority to change those. I do have some authority to, and some resources to devote in the terms of, say, Plan B, who are retired judges who owe us 35 days a year for 5 years of their time. And so we can help out when there are emergencies. But it's not a replacement, frankly, for a judge that is in that community, knows what's going on there, is there day in, day out, and can handle the dockets as they come up.
And then one last question, if I might, Mr. Chairman. Certain types of cases clearly require some experience on the part of our judges that not all, every judge has got when they come to the bench. We just recently had a large case in our law firm where we had a judge come, I think, from maybe Lane County into Marion County for a right. particularly complex case.
Yeah.
Are we doing anything about looking forward in terms of deploying judges with particular expertise so that some of those complex civil matters can be addressed by people with experience?
Yes, Representative Vial, that one of the things that we have been trying to do and have done successfully in some circumstances, not as successfully in others, is to, particularly on the complex civil side, be able to try and move judges around or develop the expertise within a particular court so that you can have somebody who understands what it's like to try a construction defect case or a intra-corporate dispute, a closely held corporation kind of case. If I could just put in a plug for the compensation issue, one of the problems that we have, frankly, is recruiting people who have strong civil litigation backgrounds. You can always get a young deputy DA or a young public defender to put their name in for a judge position. And that's great. We want those people. We'd actually like to get the more senior folks who have more experience with serious felonies, again, both on the prosecution and defense side. It is very hard in Washington County, for example, to get a family law judge, a lawyer. A successful family law lawyer in Washington County is making an awful lot more than a circuit judge. And again, there is a reward in the public service, and we can get people to think about it, but civil litigation and family law in particular are tough spots to fill. But I understand and have at times in my career also dealt with the problem of being in a court where there are, you know, two or three judges. They handle the whole range of litigation that comes their way, criminal, family, juvenile, and then you give them unfair competition civil case, and they're not going to handle it as well as somebody who actually practices in that area. Now, that's part of the system we have. We have generalists, and I don't see us moving to a system where I would say, I'm going to assign, and the judges not, you can ask the trial judges, I don't think they'd put up with it, for the Chief Justice to say, I'm going to send this experienced Multnomah County judge, you know, down to Medford to try this case, because I'm not sure any of you folks have the experience there. So it's an educational opportunity, and we do try in our judicial education program to make sure people are getting the background they need to try the cases that come before them.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Judge Ballmer.
Thank you, Chair Baker. This might be something that you can send to us later, or someone can send to us. I'm not seeing online. Do we have a breakdown, because you guys mentioned per capita, the number of cases per judge per county?
Yes, we do have that in this NCSC study. Yeah, and we can provide that. I think that it's easier when you're talking about different courts. We often end up with and when they talk about this nationally, it's often a population basis, but that's only half the story. The caseload is also an important part of the story. The caseload numbers, though, also sometimes require a little more discussion than just looking at the numbers, because the one of the things that we've seen over the past 30 years is the cases are not the way they used to be. Now, some of them on the civil docket, you know, the debt collection cases, the landlord-tenant cases are pretty straightforward. A lot of the family law cases these days are very, very complicated and time-consuming, and the law, the legal issues as well as the factual issues are pretty difficult. And we're also seeing it's not just possession of controlled substances. There are a lot of very complicated felony crimes or conspiracy cases that take a lot of time to get resolved. So we will get you, and it's probably in the materials we've already submitted somewhere, but we'll make sure that you get the NCSC study that has the caseload information. There's just sort of a caveat that it's the cases are not necessarily the same as they were 20 years ago.
Great. Okay, thank you very much, Judge. Call Judge Baker, Judge Prawl, and Judge Bailey, please.
So, Chair Barker, I apologize. I must have been thinking about my Judge Baker a minute ago. If I called you the wrong name.
I heard you.
I'm just excited like she's here.
Barker, come home. That's okay. That happens a lot, so don't worry about it.
Really?
Please. Anybody in any order, please remember to identify yourself for the record. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Good afternoon, Chair Barker and committee members. My name is Lindy Baker, and I am proud to serve as the presiding judge for the 14th District, which is Josephine County, located down in Grants Pass, Oregon. I'm now serving in my 16th year on the bench, my 12th year as the presiding judge. I want to tell you a little bit about our community and about our judges. We have four judges in Josephine County. Three of us in our bench all graduated from Grants Pass High School, two of us in the same class. But we all share a great pride for our community and a deep commitment to provide proper judicial system to the citizens of our community that we respect. Josephine County, you may have heard, has some very high poverty levels. We're about third in the state. We have a very high homelessness level, again, about third in the state. We also have a very high percentage of senior citizens. We are a retirement community, so about a quarter of our citizens are senior citizens, and that produces a vulnerable citizen group for our community. We have good news as well, though. Grants Pass was recently named as the 8th best performing small city in the nation based on economic and job growth. So we have a great future in front of us, and we are dedicated to make sure that our court performs at the highest level. Now, my mantra today is 36 years. You may have noticed my lapel. It has been 36 years since Josephine County was awarded a new judgeship. That takes us back to 1981, when the legislature unified the courts in Oregon and determined that the number of judges that were required for Josephine County to do the workload would be 4 judges. So now here we are 36 years later with the same 4 judges. Now the personnel has changed a bit. I wasn't there in 1981. In fact, I was just getting ready to start law school. But today we have 4 positions. We divide our court. One judge does our family court procedures, and the 3 remaining judges do everything else, including all of the carryover from our family court judge, because that docket far exceeds the capabilities of one person to handle. In 1981, our population was 52,000 people, and it's now, as of 2015, about 85,000. So our community has grown. But what I want to point out for you today, and by the way, all of this information is in the materials, the written materials that I submitted for our court, but I want to let you know the impact of just the recent increases in the cases that have been filed in Josephine County. Our total criminal cases increased 53% last year, 53%. Out of that percentage, we had an increase of felony cases of 63% in 1 year. Our misdemeanors increased by 31%. Our violations increased by 53%. Our probate cases, it's not all just criminal, but our probate cases increased 46%. Termination of parental rights cases, which, by the way, is considered the death penalty in family law cases for the parents, those increased 49% last year. Our permanency hearings in child welfare cases increased 50% in the last year. Here's a number that is shocking to most people. Our failure to appear rate, in other words, when criminal defendants are required to be in court and they do not appear, that rate increased 118% in the last year. And that means, with respect to 2,484 individuals, this court had to write out warrants and process those warrants. Law enforcement then had to initiate the location of these individuals, arrest them, take them into our jail, book them, or cite them for another court date, in which case they would not appear, and the judge then would write out another warrant, and the process starts all again. My top number for warrants was 53 for one individual. So this is the type of system that we're trying to deal with, and a system that requires extraordinary amount of time by the judges. Now, the chief has referenced the National Center for State Courts workload study. Please know that Josephine County was rated number 2 in needs for judicial resources for the state of Oregon and number 3 in needs for statutorily authorized judicial positions. So the workload study upheld the stats that I've referenced today. Now, I do want you to know that our judges, all 4 of us, work very hard. We work long, hard hours. We work through lunch hours. We work into the evenings and weekends. We work when we're sick. We come to work. We work when we're tired. Sometimes we work when we're sick and tired. But we're there. We're doing the court's work every single day of the year. We also take advantage of any available resources that we have available to us. We have a group of pro tems, which are voluntary attorneys who have come in to help us since 1993, a group of six attorneys. This past year, those six attorneys helped us out and resolved 535 of our cases. We also have been very fortunate to have the services of what I call a special pro tem. This is an attorney who is a professor at Southern Oregon University, who had the luxury of being on sabbatical from her teaching job last year, and she spent 2 days of every week during her sabbatical to come in and work for us on those 2 days to help with our overflow of workload. She carried on this year. She went back to work at the university at her instructor's position, and this year she continues to come in every Friday and help us out with our arraignment caseload. And when I say arraignment caseload, this is just our daily, everyday bread and butter type of work that we're doing, but she comes in and helps us. We have a lot of obstacles that we're dealing with down in Southern Oregon. We have limited law enforcement funding. We have the extraordinary FTA rate that I've referenced. We happen to be located in the apex of the Emerald Triangle, so we are dealing with all sorts of new cases that have come out of nowhere with respect to the new laws and the new issues that we're dealing with, but we are dealing with them. We have presented a group of letters from local court users and attorneys, and I ask that you do review those. They are very clear about some of the issues and problems that they run into when they have difficulties having their cases heard in our court. And then lastly, I wanted you to know that we are prepared to have a new judgeship in Joseph County. We happen to have a vacant courtroom, judges' chambers, and judicial assistant resources available. We have those because in 1998, our family court judge was relocated to another building. So we have a vacant courtroom ready to go. In a New York minute, we could put someone to work tomorrow, and I've got the cases that they could handle. We do thank you for your leadership and for the opportunity for me to come and speak to you today about the judicial resources that are sorely needed in Josephine County. Thank you. It has been 36 years.
Thank you for coming up.
Please. All right. Thank you. Chair Barker, committee members, my name is Tracy Prawl, and I'm the presiding judge for Marion County Circuit Court. I've been a judge since 2008 and was a pro tem referee judge for 3 years before that. I'm here to support the Oregon Judicial Department's request for new judgeships. There is certainly statistical information to support that our counties have become more populated and that we are struggling to meet statewide standards for timely disposition of all case types. Senior Judge Jamise Rhodes testified before this committee in 2015 on behalf of Marion County's request for a new judgeship. Our circumstances have not changed for the better since then. Civil filings continue to increase, as have hearings on our master criminal and juvenile dockets. Marion County runs three master calendars to handle the influx of these cases. This means that fewer judicial resources are available to handle individual calendars. On a monthly basis, we see 3,755 hearings per month at our criminal court annex, 1,102 hearings per month at our juvenile court, 465 hearings per month on our civil miscellaneous docket, and that doesn't include the review of over 450 ex parte orders and judgments that are submitted each week for signature. Our current need is for approximately 3.5 judicial positions, but the addition of even one judge will have a significant positive effect on the processing on case processing by decreasing case backlogs and improving timely case disposition. Our concern isn't just with the quantity of service, but also the quality of the service that we provide the citizens of Marion County. The Marion County Circuit Court is solving problems, not just processing cases. To that end, we manage five treatment courts an adult and a juvenile drug court, a child welfare dependency court, an adult mental health court, and a veterans court. As a result, collectively, our judges devote over 2.5 days each week to treatment courts. This means that other cases are handled with fewer available judicial resource hours for general case processing and trials. There is grant funding for part of these programs, but the judicial resources, the judges' time, are provided only through the general fund budget. These programs are well worth it, given what we know about the benefits of treatment courts to the clients, the system as a whole, but it is not sustainable without additional judicial resources. The quantity, quality, and complexity of the work that we perform as judges in Marion County is also affected by the fact that we sit in the state's capital. This makes our docket somewhat unique. Marion County judges handle many complex civil cases, including the vast majority of challenges to legislative action, elections issues, and claims against state agencies. Over one-third of Oregon state prisons, 5 of the 14, are located in Marion County, including Oregon's death row. Death row litigation is extremely time-consuming for our judges. The Oregon State Hospital is also within our jurisdiction. Consequently, we handle a significant number of civil commitment hearings. We have seen other changes that have increased our need for additional judges. Marion County has consolidated its justice courts, which will now only handle violations, which means that without additional resources, Marion County Circuit Court now has the responsibility for processing the increased criminal filings, which all come with the right to a court-appointed counsel and a jury trial. And in circuit court, primarily, those come in the form of DUI prosecutions. Over time, major civil and criminal cases have become more complex, the lawyering more sophisticated, and the result is that these cases require more judicial time. We have utilized a number of stopgap measures to reduce delays. We have an early disposition program for minor criminal cases, free mediation for our small claims and landlord-tenant disputes. We have a family law facilitator to assist domestic relations and self-represented litigants, as well as assisting complainants in processing restraining order applications. We have 3.5 referee pro tem judges to assist in processing criminal support enforcement, mental commitments, small claims, residential evictions, truancy, probate matters, and self-represented custody matters. We have worked with our district attorney's office to identify appropriate candidates for the Marion County Senate Bill 416 project, with the goal to develop and implement evidence-based strategies to improve the supervision of probationers and reduce recidivism. Our judges regularly conduct settlement conferences to facilitate early and less expensive resolution of criminal, civil, and domestic relations cases. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Judge Bailey.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, thank you all very much for the opportunity to talk on behalf of Washington County and the needs we have in Washington County for more judges. My name is Charlie Bailey. I'm the presiding judge in Washington County, have been for a couple years. I've been on the bench for 10 years now, and although it's not 36 years, it's been at least 10 years since a judge has been added to Washington County. As you'll see on the bill itself, there's actually a request for 2 judges, and the reasons for that are fairly simple. The population in Washington County is the fastest growing by numbers, pure population-wise, in the state of Oregon, and it's projected to be, quite frankly, by about 2050, 2055, somewhere in there, the largest county in the state. Our judges have lagged behind. The number of judges that we have has lagged behind in that. I was originally going to talk to you all about the numbers that I presented to you all, and I'm a numbers guy, and so I crunched all those numbers. And then yesterday happened, and I think it'll hopefully be an anecdotal story as to really what the needs are in Washington County. Started the docket. My actual day started at 7:30. Had folks who wanted to have a meeting about the ICE issues and things that are going on because they have clients and concerns about what's going on. That meeting took over an hour. The only time I could set it on my schedule was at 7:30 in the morning. They were accommodating. They came in at 7:30 and we chatted for a good hour plus. I then took the bench. My docket was enlarged as a result of I had 2 judges who unfortunately had a close uncle and a father who passed away.
and so they were going to be gone on bereavement. I had judges who were already scheduled to be out on vacations, and so as a result of that, they had to add more cases onto somebody's caseload because they have to be done. I tend to be efficient, and because I'm the presiding judge, there's nobody for me to complain to, and so they tend to put all those cases on my docket. So as soon as that hour-plus-long meeting was done, I immediately took the bench and had to do a sentencing. The sentencing was a high-profile sentencing. It was about a male nurse who was sexually abusing many patients. Now, those take a little bit of time, and the victims deserve that time to talk about how it's impacted their lives and for a proper sentencing. Then I got to do 35 case management conference cases, which means we had about a dozen or more change of pleas. Each change of plea takes a bit of time. We were done with our morning docket at 12:40, and so I get to do lunch, right? Well, not necessarily, because as a presiding judge, you have other issues that you have to take care of. You have personnel issues, and so the trial court administrator had two very serious issues that he wanted to chat with me about. I didn't have time. I had an out-of-county judge who wanted to get some information because she was going to be doing a CLE. We want to cooperate with those folks because we want to get information out there. I couldn't get that done either. I had staff wanting to talk about some Odyssey issues, a great computer system, but there are times when we have to make adjustments because if we don't make those adjustments, then the stuff builds up. It doesn't get processed, and so we have to have answers, excuse me, to get everything done. I didn't have time to answer their questions. I had to answer questions because our calendar folks were really upset because on Friday, because of the judges being gone, because of some vacations, because of the Justice Reinvestment Summit that we all, or a couple of judges are scheduled to be at this Thursday and this Friday, we had a judge who had forgotten to calendar a very important Oregon State Bar Commission in which he co-chairs. He forgot to give us that information. He's on that committee because the Chief Justice asked him to be on that committee. he had forgotten to let us know about that, and now I had to tell him, I don't have enough space for you to be gone. He wasn't happy with the answer that I had to give him in that regard. But that was the only answer because, as it turned out, I just don't have enough judges on Friday to deal with stuff. And in fact, myself and one of the other judges, we're going to leave the summit early to take care of some cases on Friday because that's just the only thing we can do. My day wasn't done. I then got to go back on the bench. I got to process a whole lot more case management conferences, including one of those being a Michael Carman. I've known Mr. Carman for 10 years. Mr. Carman has significant mental health issues. His life has been one big roller coaster ride that I've got to see it from time to time. It's the same sort of roller coaster ride. He goes to the Oregon State Hospital. He gets on his medications. He does very well. And everything's good. It's the smooth part of it kind of starting to go up. He then is back out in the community. He goes off his medications, the medications that are prescribed to him. He goes back onto the self-medications, the methamphetamine and the alcohol. And so then the roller coaster starts to go back down again, and that's when we get to see him again. And I think I've processed over 20 cases for Mr. Carman, and it's the same thing. I had to convince the very young deputy district attorney that I know Mr. Carman, and I know Mr. Carman's been found unable to aid and assist several times, and I know that he's been found to aid and assist after time at the Oregon State Hospital, and the right thing is not to have a new evaluation done since there's already been probably five or six of those, but let's just send him down to the state hospital at this point in time. We got that hearing done. I had another gal for a preliminary hearing because I had to do preliminary hearings because there was no other judges available for that. She refused to put her clothes on to come out to the hearing, and it would have been danger to her and or the deputies to go back into the cell to get her out. So we had to deal with that in the appropriate fashion. It was a better afternoon, done at 4:50, and then my staff got to go back to their desks and spend an extra half an hour to process all the paperwork that they got to do. They didn't leave at 5 o'clock. I have great staff, and that's what they had to do because the day just takes longer than the time it's actually allotted for. I wasn't done either. I still had to answer that out-of-county judge stuff. I still had to talk with the trial court administrator about the personnel issues, and it was about 6:40 or so that I was finally done and able to leave and go home to my wonderful wife and kids. That's the triage that we have in Washington County far too often when things happen. We have maxed out everything to such a degree that when a judge calls in sick or somebody's family member passes away, it's triage. And that's Washington County, and that's why we need and I urge you to pass this out of committee. Of all the judges in Washington County, all the judges in all the other counties, the need is there. And I agree with what Representative Vial talked about earlier about getting ahead. We are way behind in Washington County, way behind. Two judges, we're still behind in Washington County. But it's necessary, needed, and be very thankful. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Are there any questions for this panel? Thank you very much for your testimony. I'm sorry. Where does that start?
Thank you, Chair Barker. Judge Baker, the other day I received a call from an attorney in Josephine County, and he was talking somewhat anecdotally. Can't talk today. But anyway, he was telling me that with priority scheduling for your docket, that there are some things that aren't a priority, you know, especially in family law and so forth, as far as like divorce cases, that sort of thing. And he said that it's not uncommon in Josephine County that it might be 2 years before they can actually get on the docket for that. Is that your experience? Is that an accurate?
Yes, thank you, Representative Stark. That is a possibility, and in our county, we have to work on priorities. Our practice is we double, triple, quadruple set every trial date, and what that means is we will set 2 to 4 trials for each trial judge. And the hopes is that if something happens in the first trial, the parties settle or the defendant doesn't show up or something happens, then we'll go to the second trial. We always want to make sure we fill our days like that. But it is true that we are required to give priorities statutorily to certain types of cases. In our particular court, it would be the in-custody criminal defendants that generally must be taken to trial within 60 days of their incarceration. We have deal with the general speedy trial requirements of all criminal cases that we must adhere to. And then, of course, we have the mental health requirements, those cases that must be heard on an immediate basis, all of the protective orders, the juvenile dependency or cases that have very strict timelines. And sadly, yes, certain cases like dissolution cases, civil trials are the ones that tend to get to the bottom of the pile, and many times they do have to be set over, which causes a great amount of, it's not just inconvenience, but it's just injustice, in our opinion. But yes, that is very true, unfortunately.
Yeah. Follow up. Quick statement. Thank you, Chair. Two trivia pieces for you guys. You can try to figure out what the topic was, but the judge has been a judge over a case that I was involved with once upon a time. And she also neglected to mention that her graduating class, you wouldn't guess it, just because she looks 20 years younger than Rep. Wilson, was with Rep. Wilson.
I just want to thank all three of you for coming. I know the sacrifice just to get up here or down here in Charlie's case and to spend the time with us. We really appreciate it. I'm a 1972 grad of Grants Pass High School.
You go.
So.
Go cavemen.
You bet. Okay. Thanks again.
Representative Langer.
I just wanted to note that Representative Stark's comment was totally worth it, and I am delighted to hear that you graduated with Representative Wilson, so you'll have to tell us all kinds of great stories about him some other time.
I've got some great stories, and actually it goes back before high school, back to junior high.
Ooh.
That's when the real fun happened.
Can we adjourn?
Yeah.
Camera off?
Turn the camera off.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you all.
Patrick Singh.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Patrick Singh. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties. I'm also here on behalf of the Oregon District Attorneys Association supporting House Bill 2605. I have the pleasure of working as a Marion County Judicial Security Deputy one day a month. So I get to work closely with Judge Prawl and her colleagues and the many staff, visitors, and users of the court system. And I see personally how hard they work. I also see the backlog that they face and the challenges that they face in the court system as well. And of course, that backlog generally translates to more time that deputies and deputy DAs and court staff and other folks spend on particular cases, as well as potentially folks staying in jail for longer as well. So those resources are then shifted to the local county level. Many of you know that counties are doing really great work in justice reinvestment. You all helped push that through a number of years ago. You'll hear, for those of you in the public safety subcommittee this afternoon, a Douglas County commissioner will be talking about the work that they are doing through their drug court and the phenomenal results that they've had through their drug court and other justice reinvestment programs. They have a tremendous veterans population in Douglas County, as you know, with the VA being there and also many homeless vets. So they are wanting and needing a veterans court in the county. And to do that, they need more capacity and another judge to do that. So that's one of the many stories we have all over the state in terms of the benefits to adding additional judges, and hope that the legislature, you and the legislature, will support those efforts. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions for us? Thank you, Patrick. We close the public hearing on House Bill 2605 and open a work session. Again, this has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
All right, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2605 to the floor with a due. What? Is that the right. wrong one?
That is right. I'm okay. Sorry. I said the wrong number.
Okay. With a due pass recommendation, the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Williamson moves House Bill 2605 to the floor with a due pass with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Are there any discussion?
Yes.
Any questions? Okay, Representative, again.
Thank you, sir. We all know there's a big problem in Ways and Means this year. Nearly $2 billion shortfall. And I think there was sort of an interest in if we send things down to Ways and Means, we give them some sense of priority for the things we're sending down. We're sending two bills down. This one will be about $1 million a year, I think. Do we have any sense of whether we prefer the salary increase or the increased charge, or is that an appropriate? Would there be any help for us to comment on?
Sorry. I don't know the answer to that.
But are you asking, do you want to make a comment on the record about your preference?
No, I don't. I don't have a preference, but I don't have a specific preference. We want both, but we might help the Ways and Means process of getting. We ought to think about it. Maybe an informal process might be the way to do it. But I think we probably are not going to get both of them, I would guess, in this.
It's going to be very difficult to get 9 judges as well, although we certainly strive for that. Okay, Representative Stark.
Thank you, Chair. And just on that note, these are going to be very difficult conversations and how to prioritize what and when. I think it's about to be obvious that this committee is supportive of the concept and wants the conversation to continue as we try to figure out how to make this happen, and hopefully we can find a way to do that.
Thank you.
You sure that's a...
Okay, so it's been moved that we move the bill to the floor to do pass with a subsequent referral.
Yes.
Are there any objections?
Did you count me?
Seeing none, so ordered.
Thank you.
You're in.
Probably ask what the bill is first.
Yeah.
Yes.
I should have told him that was from Women's Health Clinic. He just.
Judges will talk.
So you're a yes on the background checks, then, is that right? Open a public hearing on House Bill 2594.
Thank you, Chair Barker, members of the committee. House Bill 2594 was brought to us by Representative Olson. Oregon law currently requires that members of state police, police officers, certified reserve officers, correction and parole and probation officers be a citizen of the United States. House Bill 2594 would modify these laws to allow non-immigrants lawfully admitted to the U.S. pursuant to a compact of free association to serve in these fields. There is no fiscal or revenue impact, and there are no amendments.
Okay.
So, Mr. Chair, before you invite some folks up, I just want to give everybody on the committee here a little bit of heads up of how we got to where we're at today with this bill.
Okay.
If you recall, a few years back, Representative Springer moved a bill forward for us to vote on for giving the COFA population the ability to have Oregon driver's licenses. That was a huge step for us. Then the last 2 years, through Representative Greenlick's committee, which I greatly appreciate, we moved forward with providing them also health care insurance. And we moved forward and were successful with that. During that process, I stumbled onto an individual that it was a healthy, you know, stout kid that was maybe about 23, 24 years old. He wanted to be a law enforcement officer, but he was prevented from moving forward with that. And you get the idea of what's happening nationally as well as state, and that's why Eric Skablich is going to be here, too, to share a little bit from DPSST, the need for qualified candidates. And as a result, that's what we have this bill for now, is to kind of open up that door for that.
Okay. Thank you.
These are all folks who serve in our armed forces in America.
Mm-hmm.
Affirmative.
Okay, so hopefully I'll be able to read the names right. Mr. Anatok, maybe? In
yep.
Inyan and Capel, please. Can you go in any order, but please remember to identify yourself for the record.
Yeah. Good afternoon.
Good.
Chair Barker, Vice Chairs Roy Essman Olson, and committee members. I'm Lloyd Henyon, and I represent a nonprofit organization called CAN, which stands for COFA Alliance National Network. Do you want the others to identify themselves first?
When they speak.
I'll go ahead. Okay. So let me first quickly give you some definitions and acronyms. COFA, COFA, excuse me, stands for Compact of Free Association, which is a unique treaty that the United States established since 1986 with three nations, the Republic of the Marshall Islands, the Republic of Palau, and the Federated States of Micronesia. And just so you know, Federated States of Micronesia has four states, Pohnpei, Yap, Coast Rai, and Chuuk. COFA residents are simply people from any of these nations legally residing in the United States. Now, House Bill 2594 allows COFA residents that legally reside in Oregon to be eligible for law enforcement jobs at the state, county, and local levels of government, not the federal level. They are not eligible to have law enforcement jobs presently in Oregon because they are legally here as a result of the COFA treaty, but they're still not eligible. Under COFA, the United States has total jurisdiction over all military operations of these islands, including the Ronald Reagan anti-ballistic missile base in Kwajalein Atoll in the Marshall Islands. Indeed, the relationship is unique and is critical to the mutual defense of all the Pacific Islands, as well as all of the defense interests of the United States. To underscore the uniqueness of this, of the United States' relationship with the COFA nations, COFA people join the U.S. military regularly at rates that are higher than any state in the Union. Many people were surprised to learn that even though young COFA men and women are highly trained by the military to defend our nation, they were not eligible to defend us locally, including their own legal residents who reside among us. I would like to stress that the population of our COFA neighbors, that the patriotism of our COFA neighbors cannot be questioned. It is gratifying to know that this bill has the support of the National Association of Atomic Veterans. Thank you, Representative Springer. And law enforcement agencies, including the state and county chiefs of police. So with that, I'd like to introduce the person here next to me. And Mr. Capel, And he's going to give a little bit about his story, and then we'll conclude with Mr. Anatok.
Hey, thank you. Please.
Thank you. My name is Nikita Capel, PF of Marcellus Community here in Oregon, Salem. And Sarah, Representative Parker, Vice Chair's Honorable Member Committee, thank you. My name is Nikita Capel again. I was born in the Marshall Islands and been in Salem since 2011. I am here today to keep my voice and encourage you to support House Bill 2594, although I personally have not been in the military. Many of my families and friends have been served proudly for this great country. I currently work as a full-time security sergeant. For the past 5 years, I have been strong interest in working for the law enforcement. Some of my countrymen and women have served military honor and served with pride and honor in the defense for the four of our home highlands and his great country, and this great country, for whom we love. We are here now as the member of this community and seek the many opportunity it provides us. We are here to live, work freely, and to keep our children hope of better life and future. I don't believe that our service could end with our military terms. We strongly believe that we should be allowed to offer our service to local law enforcement agencies and communities. We're here live in the United States. I have a strong interest in this because I feel that our community is growing fast and we need our community as a whole. I am strongly believer in safety and security. Proud resident of Oregon from the Marshall Islands, and again, I heard you support on House Bill 2594. Again, thank you so much for listening and for the great opportunity to allow my people to serve in law, serve the law of law enforcement, sorry. Again, my name is Nikita, member of the communities, Marshallese community, and Ken. Thank you, and I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Please.
Chair Parker, Vice Chairs, and members of the committee. My name is David Anatok. I'm starting to get used to this, I think. I've been doing this for the last 3 years, four, maybe five, with Lloyd Hinnian and many others here. Some of you I've met in person, and just wanted to, again, thank you very much for this opportunity. Obviously, I'm in support of House Bill 2594, and just to bring all of what has already been said, Representative Wilson touched on most of what I kind of wrote down here on the sheet of paper, but just to highlight again the strong support of the Oregon legislators in the past, going on 4 years now since we were first introduced into this building. Start with the driver license. When we were restricted to 1 year driver license, Oregon is the first and only state there's about six other states that are still implementing the Safe ID Act and affecting these COFA citizens that are residing in those states. And Oregon is the only one so far that has corrected that, allow us to have 8 years license like any other Oregonians. And we're proud of that. We thank you for that. ACR 21 in 2015, which Representative Springer strongly introduced to the floor, that was passed unanimously, of course, by all of you. We thank you again. Introduced our COFA Islanders and their sacrifice in military services. And this bill would just elevate that using those unique skills here locally. Why not? We had a healthcare bill, which was strongly again, unanimously passed last year in the short session, and it was championed by our current champion for this bill, Representative Olson, which bring health care, quality care to these citizens. First time since 1996. We've been banned because of the Major Welfare Reform Act of 96, and Oregon, again, is leading the way in correcting some of these barriers for our COFA citizens. Now, House Bill 2594 represents another important step in helping to repair some of these barriers and remaining caps not specifically addressed in the treaty. It goes without saying that as our populations grow in communities in Oregon, we need equitable opportunities to compete for all jobs. Law enforcement should not be excluded, especially since we serve freely and enthusiastically in the military. With this, I urge your support on House Bill 2594, and all of our testimonies will be soon uploaded and shared in all this. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions, Representative Springer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not so much a question, but Lloyd mentioned, I want to point out that they also have the support of the Atomic War Veterans Association. And the reason for that is, and maybe some of us know this, maybe some of us don't, this came from 1947 to 51 when the U.S. government was doing nuclear trials on your land and kind of destroyed the land. And so there's been this trust agreement ever since, a new one in, I think it was 86, they instituted a new one. But there's a great relationship between our atomic war veterans and this organization. And so I just want to point that out, why that was mentioned, because we sent our military there post-World War II and did a lot of horrendous things.
Thank you, Representative Springer.
They were there during World War II as well. Mm-hmm. Ferocious battles there.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. We'll call Eric Gablitz, please. Eric Scanlon. He's special.
Thank you, Chair Barker, members of the committee. For the record, Eric Scablish from the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. I would just start by thanking all of you that have served and all the members of COFA that have served in our nation's armed forces and protected our country. This issue came up a number of months ago when a community forum was hosted here in Marion County that involved all the police chiefs, the district attorney, the sheriff, Superintendent Hampton from Oregon State Police, and myself. And we talked about how do we build partnerships to ensure our communities are safe. One of the things that was brought up across the board was that people in our communities want to see people that look like them working in our law enforcement agencies. And as a result, this issue came forward, which as we talk about recruiting people who work in law enforcement, corrections, and probation, we want our agencies to be diverse. One of the things that came up very quickly was the COFA. Residents are not able to serve currently as a result of the statute, and what's in front of you today addresses that. The chiefs and sheriffs, as you know, are looking to recruit and hire great people to work in our communities around the state, and we want to cast as large a net as possible to be able to get them. This bill doesn't reduce the background checks. It doesn't reduce the standards. What it does, it makes that net larger so that we can get COFA members to apply. While DPSST is neutral on the bill, we have no concerns what's being brought up. It doesn't weaken the standard. It doesn't reduce anything that we're doing. In fact, it just gives us a bigger pool to choose from. So we wanted to share that, and I'd be glad to answer any questions for you.
All right, thank you. Any questions for Representative Springer?
I don't know who this question is directed to. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at the website for U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services and been doing some checking here. Is Oregon revised statute the only obstacle?
Currently for us, yes. I'm sorry, Co-Chair Barker, Representative Springer, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would want to confirm we don't have a federal issue there. Yeah. I don't think we do as
we
I've
don't.
Gone through
we
this.
Don't. Thank you.
Okay.
And I want to, again, thank Representative Olson, Representative Springer, for the work you've done on this issue in the past with this group. And just even though it's a little farther south in the ocean, a historical event on the 9th of this month was the conclusion of the battle for Guadalcanal, which, in my opinion, turned the tide in World War II, not Midway, not the Battle of Midway. The Japanese Navy was still vastly stronger later on. But anyway, and thank you very much. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2594 and open a work session.
So, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2594 to the House floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Olson moves House Bill 2594 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any questions? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. And Representative Springer, would you carry the bill for us, please? And
I would Olson, love to, but if Representative Olson brought
this. No, she can
this.
Speak. She'll follow me.
Hey, thank you.
I would gladly take this bill from him.
No further business before the committee. Stand adjourned.
Are you okay with you? Okay with
business before the committee? Stand adjourned.
Are you?